This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leandro Nati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Onati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but someone named Jasper W. Cartwright calls me Jeremily, the adverb form of Jeremy. Jeremily. I suppose he kicked the ball, Jeremily. And fell on his face, to use it in a sentence.
Jeremily.
That's good.
Yes.
That's very good. That wasn't me, by the way.
I don't know why. I have on here Jasper W. Cartwright, Jeremily adverb form.
That definitely wasn't me. I was like, I struggle with adverbs and things. That wouldn't be me.
It may have been that you missed either jokingly called me Jeremily or like mistakenly pronounced my name as Jeremily one time. And so I just stuck it on here. I don't remember. I just know that it's been here for
That's
months.
That's amazing.
It's been
cool.
Here for
awesome.
Months.
So it might have been me.
I think it actually was. I just don't know the context. Text in which it was said. I just know that it's on
I was
here.
Thinking, like, when did we get a patron called Jasper W. Cartwright? Why didn't I think about that?
Oh, no,
like,
it's definitely you. It's definitely me. I just don't remember the context.
I was so convinced in my own dyslexia that I was like, there's no way that I could have talked about, like, adverbs or whatever. Like, it just, like, that wouldn't be a thing. This has got to be someone else.
It may have been, like, a supreme moment of clarity where everything, like, aligned. You put on those, like, color filters that really straighten the words out, and it's like the mental version, and everything made sense, and you were like, adverb form, Jeremily.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Just a game!
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah! We're about to get into something real big now.
So hey, halflings, this is, wait for it, our 50th TBH episode.
Woo-hoo!
50!
Yeah!
Which is very, very cool. Which is very,
that was
very,
like
very
a
cool.
Cat doing the horn.
That's officially the TBH version, Yonati. I'm expecting you to roll that out whenever something cool happens.
Okay, cool, I will. I don't mind meowing all the time.
Just a deep-voiced cat.
Meow, 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 meow. Meow, meow, meow. Meow, bat cat. Meow, meow, meow. That's actually a perfect segue into what we're talking about today. Because we have, we thought for our 50th episode, we would do a little fun, a little bit something different. We've had a lot of, like, amazing guests on the show recently. We've had a lot of, deep topics to get into, and so we thought we would do something fun, and we would talk about some of our favorite superhero movies. We would try and make like a list of our favorite like top five. Just to preface this is not saying that we think these are the best five. You can have your own best five. That's fine. We're not telling you these ones have to be your favorites. And we're also, I think we kind of agreed, didn't we, guys, that we're not going to say, like, this is definitively, like, our 1, 2, 5. It was just more of, like, this is a general top five, you know? For each of us individually as well, because we already came to the conclusion there's no way that me and Jeremy were going to agree on a top five superhero films. Because Jeremy, I think, what was it when we were planning this? You said that if certain films are not there, you would refuse to put your name on it and quit the show.
I think there were two or three movies that I said if they weren't on the list, I would just refuse to endorse the list. As being any kind of top five that I was invested in. I would just withdraw my name from consideration. But I mean, it's not like I'm sitting here like, guys, if X-Men Apocalypse is not on this list, it's not like
honestly, if you said that, Jeremy, I think we'd look for a new third co-host. Like, just no offense to anyone who likes that movie, but like, I can't tell you how much I hated it. I was like sat there the whole time, like, yo, is it Oscar Isaacs who plays the bad guy in that one?
Yeah. He plays Apocalypse.
I remember being like, it takes a lot for me to dislike Oscar Isaacs, but I do right now. Like, I really do.
I think the fan consensus that is, it is definitively the weakest of the Bryan Singer X-Men movies. I don't think you'll get much criticism. I don't think you get much disagreement from most people on that.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. I'm not about to get harpooned on Twitter. Our fans have been very nice. Yeah.
I will probably get harpooned.
Unati about to come out here. Blade Trinity, best Blade. X-Men 3, best X-Men.
Spider-Man 3,
second best Spider-Man after Amazing Spider-Man 2.
With that Jamie Foxx, sidecomb or whatever it was.
In the Jamie Foxx soundtrack. He hates me. That is one of the dumbest soundtrack moments I've ever heard. Did you notice that in the actual movie?
No. Is that actually him?
I don't know who it is, but on the soundtrack, like when he's getting all angry, they have a person like narrating his thoughts in rhythm to the music.
It's like he
laughed at me. He hates me. It's so stupid.
He hates me.
He's full on the guy who played Mario.
He hates me.
Like, Mario.
What the hell?
It's a misstep.
It's me, a misstep. That's incredible. I didn't know. I blotted a lot of those films out because I remember being super excited because I really loved Andrew Garfield at the time.
Yeah.
Was just like endlessly disappointed when they came out. And I remember as soon as I saw, I think Jamie Foxx, like the elevator doors open and you see Jamie Foxx like being like weird little man with his like hair combed over. He's all like sweaty and it's just like, what have they done to you, Jamie Foxx?
Oh, and then when he gets his electric powers, the gap in his tooth gets fixed.
Yeah. No.
That's like something that belonged in a different movie. That is like something, a throwback to like earlier, sillier superhero movies.
That's like a Bill and Ted moment. Do you know what I mean? Like, that had been in like something
that
like that.
That would have worked in the Joel Schumacher Batman, for instance.
Sure. Yeah.
It would have worked in something like that.
It does not work. The gap has been fixed.
I think it's fair to say Andrew Garfield was bad casting. I think the acting wise, I didn't think his performance was bad, but the dude is too. He doesn't.
He's cool and
handsome.
Yeah, he was like 28 years old or something when he did that film. Like, he was quite clearly just like an old dude. And so they caught the rest of the high school were also filled with like 30-year-olds to try and make him look younger. I was like, this guy just doesn't go to high school. Like, To be fair, they did it for Raimi as well.
Like, Peter Parker, I think Tobey Maguire was like 28 when they did the first Spider-Man.
Yeah, I wonder whether it was just
Joe Manganiello
the time.
Has never looked younger than 30, and he plays Flash Thompson. In that movie.
Oh my God, yeah. He does.
Yeah, like, I think they got around that by having him leave high school within like halfway through the first movie.
But I also do think that it was more of the time. Like, nearly every film had 30-year-olds in high school at the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, whereas now I feel like we've got a bit better at just having good child actors.
20 to 25 now.
Yeah, Smallville was a ridiculous TV series, just watching actual
40-year-old Tom Welling. Tom Welling has three kids at home. He's been married three times.
It's like 21 Jump Street was like the watershed moment where like there's that joke where like the coach comes up to Channing Tatum and goes like, "You have excellent definition for a 21-year-old or whatever." And there was like a real moment of everyone going, oh, I know, an 18-year-old, I think he said this. Like, everyone who sat at home went, oh, yeah, like, that really doesn't work, does it?
He doesn't look even remotely like a child.
Like, how have we accepted this for so long?
So weird.
Like, I'm so with you on Smallville, though. Like, I not really clocked it until now, and I'm suddenly, like, having some weird flashback. I'm like, like, yeah. What?
They're all so old.
They're so old.
Really, really old.
I remember I had the same feeling with Xander towards the end of Buffy, where I was like, this dude is aging. Like, he's not. He's just a full-grown man.
Like, full-grown man, dude. Still cute, but with a dad bud, you know what I'm saying? Just,
yeah. Oh dear. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and talk about some of our favorite movies?
is this the first ever Halfling top five?
This is our first ever
inaugural Halfling top five. I feel like we need a snappy name for it.
If you have a snappy name, we'll try to come up with one by the end of the episode. But if not, then hit us up on the Discord or something.
Yeah.
And tell us what you think the name for these Halfling top five should be. And also feel free to suggest some, because we love doing pop culture-y stuff. Okay. So in no particular order, does anyone want to kick us off with their one from their list?
Can we roll initiative?
Oh, great idea.
My dice are so far away.
You
run three black halflings here. It's a Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
This is not an actual play episode.
I mean, that's not an excuse.
As far as I'm concerned, there's never any excuse to be to not have your dice on hand.
Yes, you always need them just in case.
I don't care if you are driving a car. I don't care if you are on the toilet. I don't care if you're in the tub.
Yeah,
dice
in the tub especially.
Also in the shower. You should have shower dice.
Oh, God. Don't get the D4s in there, because that could be a real hazard. Like, do not take the D4s into the shower.
Oh, I rolled a BLM.
Hey, nat 20. I got a 7. So.
I got a 15. I think Unati wins easily.
Unati, you win easy.
Yeah,
Tell us.
So, I'm going to go with Unbreakable.
Yeah. Great this was movie.
Yeah. This yes tell us about this this was I will say this was like seventh on my list. This was very close to making the top five for me.
It's a He Who Shall Not Be Named film. No, I'm kidding. It's an M. Night Shyamalan film, starring Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson. You know, your average Joe, your everyman, discovers that, you know, he's actually a bit more average than not. I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen the 2000 Unbreakable release.
You will believe a man can be above average.
I think we should say, like, if we say the title of a movie, like, just if you don't want spoilers, just pause the pod and go watch and then come back to it. Because I feel like most of these movies I'm mentioning have been out for several years.
Do you know what I mean?
So,
yeah.
Like, 2000, I think you can spoil this movie, Nati. Like, if you haven't seen it,
yeah,
just pause and go watch.
Yeah.
I guess it's the other really good early M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah. It is.
Absolutely.
After that other one with the ghosts.
The Sixth Sense, yes.
Yes. I just call it the one with the ghosts and the weird kid.
The one with the ghosts.
She doesn't want to say the name in case they...
the lead character, David Dunn, essentially discovers that an ordinary man, you know, your average Joe, discovers that he is, in fact, unbreakable after a train wreck, I think it was. That kills everybody except him. Not a scratch on him. You know, discovers that he's never been ill before, and it's a real slow burner of a movie. Like, don't go, if you've never seen it, don't go into it thinking that you're going to get, you know, Marvel-esque kind of vibes.
Yes,
it's very much the kind of dramatic telling of a superhero and their villain, really, because Mr. Glass is also an important figure in this film.
Like, Samuel Jackson chewing some scenery in this film. Like,
really?
I love a good, like, crazy Samuel Jackson performance. Like, a good off-the-wall, unhinged Samuel Jackson is the best.
Yeah. I think of this as actually pretty understated Sam Jackson for the most part.
He doesn't really scream much.
He's just got crazy hair and is very serious.
Yeah.
It's not until kind of the end where you're like, oh man.
I guess it's
which
not
kind of
like,
makes it even scarier.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not saying, he's screaming. Yeah, he's definitely not screaming, but just a more of a eccentric character, shall we say.
It's in the same vein as Steven, yet a little bit like more understated than Steven.
Yeah.
Steven from Django Unchained, specifically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's in that kind of vein.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite superhero films. I can't get it out from underneath my skin. And it really just sits with me in a good way. That's why it's on my list, yo.
Early Bruce Willis as well.
Great performances. Beautiful cinematography.
Really good
script writing. A twist that doesn't piss you off.
A twist that actually deepens the movie.
Yeah, deepens the plot.
Similar to The Sixth Sense. Also deepens the movie.
And then after that, he just went left. But as a filmmaker,
Shyamalan got off the good train.
We went well
ahead. Made Avatar, so cool.
Yeah, and I think it was really good. I mean, later on, where was it? Last year or 2 years ago, they released Glass, so people might be familiar with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of similar characters from the universe. And what was the other one with James McAvoy?
Split.
That's that kind of world. That's
tonally
that's
very, very different, I would say, both of those. Split and Glass are a lot more high octane in comparison.
Definitely a lot more high octane.
Interestingly, actually, tone was one of the big things that I pointed to in the building of my list. And actually, that was one of the reasons why I nearly had Unbreakable on it, because I thought, like, it's so interesting tonally as a movie. Like, it's so much more. It's a lot more nuanced than a lot of the films that I've got on my list. And I was like, maybe I do want it because it's something different, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it is at its core, thematically, narratively, it is a superhero movie. It's just not a Skopskittendonner, which is what our South Africans call action films sometimes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's a drama. It's a slow burn drama. Understated slow burn drama. Yeah. Even the action is like slow burn understated.
Yeah, yeah. And like, but like weirdly terrifying. I mean, that drowning scene just absolutely gives me the shivers every time. I'm like, cover your pools,
You know what? The whole movie feels like it mirrors Bruce Willis's performance, where it's just kind of sad and slow.
In a good way, slow and confused.
And it works really, really well.
It's
a different experience than you're going to get from most superhero movies. It doesn't follow that same formula. And when it does adhere to the formula, it does it in a way that is like, it is thematically appropriate to the film.
It's not just
like, oh, this is what's supposed to happen now. It actually is more like this. We're doing this because this is actually what's supposed to happen now. It's not just we feel like this is what happened now. We're telling you this is what should happen now. So we're having this happen now. It's actually really cool in a meta sense. That movie's awesome.
Yeah. Amazing. Jeremy, you were next on the initiative. So what do you got for us?
There were three movies on my list that were like immediate. Oh yeah, this has to be. And then there was a lot after that. It's pretty much a toss up for me. There's a lot of really, really good movies. So there's three that I'm like, these are like probably my current three favorite superhero movies. After that, there's a lot of really good movies. So I picked two that had stood out to me. The first of which is The Incredibles.
I think
you could make a case for this pound for pound being one of the best superhero movies ever made. It's really good. It's just the only good Fantastic Four movie anybody's ever made.
It's
just a great movie. It mixes the classic tone of like 1950s aesthetic with like a more modern sci-fi sleek spy aesthetic. Also, the music is fantastic. The voice performances are fantastic. The powers are nothing that you haven't seen before, but they're done very effectively. The characterization.
Some of the combo stuff as well, like the way they combine powers, like Dash and Violet.
Violet.
Like there's a whole that whole forest scene. It's just amazing.
And then of course, the thousand mile dash when he seeing a kid experience the joy of like discovering his own powers and like coming into his own. And then I think thematically there's a lot going on as well. Mm-hmm. The idea of like being willing to accept that you need help and can't do everything on your own, but also accept that like you can't necessarily always control like your family, because it deals a lot with Bob's desire. It's an interesting thing with Pixar. I feel like if you look at the golden age of Pixar, almost all of their good movies are about middle-aged men, in contrast to the classic Disney movies, which are mostly about young girls or young women, I guess. But usually about middle-aged men. And this one's no different. It's a middle-aged dad who's having a midlife crisis and wants to try and be the big man for his family, but has to come to terms with the fact that, no, his family are capable. They're human beings in and of themselves. He has to step back and let them rise to the top, as well as the fact that the mom and really the society as a whole are having to like understand, like, okay, just because some people are not comfortable with these, with our differences, doesn't mean we shouldn't embrace them and express them and use them for the betterment of humankind. Yeah, then you have like the everything with syndrome, and I think there are some really interesting issues raised there with the resentment that people who are quote unquote not special or not gifted. There's obviously there's been accusations of like kind of the movie being kind of a Randian philosophy, like Randian movie philosophically, that is. And yeah, I mean, that's not really how I interpret it, but you could, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, sure. It's like, look, the point is
Ayn Rand? Ayn Rand?
Yeah, Ayn Rand. Because the idea of the superheroes all being the like objectivism, all of them being exceptional.
Oh, okay.
And it's like
the exceptional
people are the ones who should rule society, and the villain is somebody who isn't exceptional fighting it. Yeah. Anyway,
I can see that, but okay.
There's a lot going on in the movie, no matter which way you cut it. It is hilarious.
Yeah.
It is heartwarming. The action is fantastic.
Baby Jack, still one of the best characters in superhero worlds ever. Like the whole babysitter storyline. She's on the phone just and one of my favorite lines as well. The what are you looking at, kid? I don't know, something amazing, I guess. It's so good. It's and the payoff at the end where he witnesses the whole final showdown with Syndra. Yeah. Oh, it's just the soundtrack actually came on for that. Me and Jade were playing Risk the other day, and we were listening to movie soundtracks, and then it just came ba-dum, ba-ba-dum, and we both were like, oh, like it fills you with such joy. Like what a movie.
It's
what a
such movie. A good movie. If you haven't seen it by some chance, please go watch it. It's really good. I don't much care for the sequel. I think the sequel was a really real letdown. Basically just ran through the same ground as the original. But the original, in my opinion, is a stone cold classic.
I would like to push back slightly. I genuinely really enjoyed the second movie. I thought that the pace of the movie I thought was really, really good. And I loved the character development. I thought it was very interesting. So I didn't dislike the second one. I actually really, really, really did enjoy it. But it's not on my list, so I ain't gonna talk about it. What is on my list, however...
Wait, before you move on, I wanted to point out, this is the second consecutive movie that contains Samuel L. Jackson.
We had him first
as Mr. Glass, and now we have him as Frozone. I'm curious to see how many movies on this list Samuel L. Jackson appears in.
We're going to find Samuel L. Jackson.
I am going to go... I was picking between two on my list, because mine was very much the same as yours, Jeremy. I had three that were dead certs, and then I had, like, the other two I was really flitting around, filling the spot. And I ultimately picked this next one because I was like, Jeremy Nianotti won't pick this, and I feel like it needs to get mentioned. It is a Samuel Jackson movie, or at least it has Samuel Jackson in it, and I have gone for Avengers Infinity War. And the main reason that I have gone for Avengers Infinity War, I really struggled with this one, and I was actually having a conversation with Jade, which kind of swung it for me, which was that we were talking about the fact that for us, fundamentally, like, superhero movies live and die by a good villain. I think if you really nail the villain, then I think that's like 75% of the work of the movie, right? Because if you hate the villain enough, the hero can become... you get leeway with how entertaining the hero has to be, because you care more about wanting to see the bad guy lose. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's what the movie then becomes about. And I think that Thanos is an incredible villain. And then the reason it's on my list is purely because to weave together the completely, like, very, very different tonally movies that are all contained within this. Like, you've got Guardians of the Galaxy one side, then you've got, your Captain Americas and things like a Winter Soldiers and things like that, and weave that all into one to not only then be a culmination of 10 years worth of movies, which is then also setting up the next sort of thing of movies. I just think it's a genuinely like an amazing feat. And how many series of movies have we seen just fail at this exact task? Avengers Infinity War surpassed my expectations of what I thought that film was going to be. I went into it thinking, I don't know how this is going to work. And I was just edge of the seat the whole time. And spoiler ahead, but you should have gone for the head and then was my mind was blown in that in the cinema. I was sat there and everything was falling out. I was like, what? Oh my God. Like it was, yeah, amazing. And I think just for that moment, it pipped Endgame for being in the list because I wanted to have one of them in the list, but it was just the way that it did that finale, that final battle in Wakanda is just, again, breathtaking and really, I just thought, purely for the more, I guess, more for the what everything that surrounded the movie in terms of like the task that it had to achieve. I think that's why it's in there for me.
Yeah,
it's
a really good movie.
It is a really good movie.
I would say in terms of action, probably in terms of MCU movies, I might put it as like the second or third best in terms of consistently really good action scenes, which is saying a lot. Because most of those movies, at least to me, feel pretty weightless. I think once we hit around 2008 and things switched to almost exclusively CGI, I stopped liking superhero action as much.
But it doesn't feel grounded. It's just very like punch. It's almost like Dragon Ball Z without the punch. Do you know what I mean? Everything's just flying through
Dragon
buildings.
Ball Z
kind
feels
of thing.
Real. This just
That's
feels
what I mean.
Like
it feels
floating.
Like it has the hit. Yeah.
But like when Thanos reaches up and pulls off a section of the moon, just rips out some of them and just you feel that viscerally, like the way he's making his fist. You hear the and that whole fight, the desperate fight with them versus Thanos on that junk planet is wild. I don't even know why I'm calling it a junk planet. I don't remember if it is, but that planet where they're
Titan.
Fighting Thanos.
It's Titan. Titan that they're... Okay, yeah. It's Thanos' home planet that's been destroyed. I think that's a great microcosm, though, of why I think the film is so good, is that, again, tonally in that one scene, you've got so many different things going on. You've got, like, Spider-Man making these quips. You've got, like, Iron Man, who is dead fucking serious about trying to save, like, humanity. You've got, then you've got Peter Quill, who comes in and does the whole, why did you say that name? Da, 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 like all of that moment. And it Martha!
The best scene. Martha!
Martha! That's how Endgame finishes, guys.
Oh, I just wanted to jump in. For fans of Infinity War who enjoy reading comics, I suggest checking out Thanos Quest, because that is, in the original Marvel comics, the story of how Thanos actually got in the comics they're known as the Infinity Gems, not the Infinity Stones, but some of the same characters do show up, but it's basically Thanos as like a one-man army outsmarting and outpowering just a series of people. What's really interesting is his motivations are different, because in the comics, rather than just like having an ideological thing, he's actually in love with the personification of death. But the ending is still very poignant. Like I was legitimately sad for Thanos at the end. It's a pretty cool comic. It's not that long either. It's worth checking out.
Amazing. So that's our first round. Yanati, what's up next on your list?
Again, this is kind of like a slightly throwaway one. It's just because it's like it's always been one of my favorites since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It gives me warm and tinglies. But The Phantom.
Hey!
1996. Gotta love me some Billy Zane in a purple jumpsuit.
Yeah. Whoa, that is a throwback. That's like pre-superhero.
Yeah.
We're talking Phantom.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've loved that. I think I watch it once every 3 years. It's just got like a warm, cuddly place in my heart with a bowl of ice cream. But it's really one of my favorites. It's kind of funny and has a bit of action to it. It doesn't take itself that seriously. Feels a little bit Indiana Jonesy as well. And Billy Zane looks great in a purple jumpsuit. That's my story. And I'm sticking to it. And when
you don't need any more than that.
How old was I? Wow. How old was I? 1987. I was nine. 9 year old me was like, wow, that's a thirst trap right there.
I wish you could have seen his hair. I think that was the thing. For me, with that costume, he just looks like
I
feel like the fact
this.
That his whole head is covered except for his little mouth.
Yeah,
just looks really goofy
and his
to
face.
Me.
He had like those. Like,
you know what it reminds me
eyes.
Of? It reminds me of the early X-Men costumes as well. I mean, I know it's like based on the actual Phantom costume from like the 30s, but or 30s or 40s. But it looks like the original X-Men outfits which always look really goofy to me. Where you can't see their hair, they're just I don't know what it's evocative of.
It's
maybe
a bit
like
weird,
the,
like cyclists. It looks like cyclists with those like roller skates. looking dudes going around
like the
Olympics.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory scene where they all have to dress like that. Where I think Mike TV gets shrunk down.
Yeah.
Have you watched the Malcolm in the Middle episode where is it Hal the dad?
Yeah.
Starts like professional speed walking.
Yeah.
And he's got this like I've just looked at the image. It's like exactly like that, but he's got this like sort of slick back helmet thing, and it's honestly one of the funniest.
It's
very much like that.
It's
very funny.
Yeah, that gets a sentimental vote for me.
Mm. Nice. I like that. I like that. Jeremy, what's up next for you?
For me, next up, another one that I think at one point would have been solidly on my list. At this point, I pretty much just see it as one of a number of very, very good movies that could show up on a list like this. Mm-hmm. Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
I absolutely
love that movie. Yeah. I would say, for my money, probably the best action in an MCU movie. In terms of just making you feel it. Like that opening boat sequence, I was just rewatching it. I'm just like, whoo.
Yeah. I need to take a break after this.
I really like the fact that they're making me go, ooh, at a Captain America movie. He's an actual soldier. He just straight up kills people because he's a soldier, which I also appreciate. This is, I would say, interestingly enough, and I think a lot of people disagree, but I will explain it. I would say this is one of the best Superman movies ever made, because the way that the MCU approached Captain America in general, and Captain America at his core, in my opinion, is a very Superman-like character.
Sure.
For me, the core of Superman, what makes Superman interesting, is not the fact that he's so strong. It's the fact that he is a person who has power and chooses to do the right thing because he thinks it's the right thing to do. Not because his family died or because he had some horrible failure in the past, but just because he's like, I'm a person who can help people out, and I believe that this is the thing that I should be doing. And that is what I think that movie shows how to approach a character like that in an interesting way. Because really, as interesting and engaging as the action is, I feel like the idea of whether or not Captain America can win against somebody is rarely in doubt. Similar to Superman. Yeah. Like the opening scene of the movie is showing just how much stronger he is than a normal human by just having
he's running on that boat sequence where he like runs through the portholes.
Yeah.
There's like a guy running away, I think. Or like there's a guy like there, and you see Captain America just like through these ports, and it almost looks like he's teleporting because he's just in a full sprint.
I remember that
being like, oh my god, this guy is terrifying. Like if Captain America just ran full pelt at you, you would shit your pants. Like it would be so scary. Yeah.
It establishes him as essentially a Superman, because there's nobody in that movie that's really stronger than him. But I think what makes the movie good is the fact that it shows the way to make a character like that interesting, a good person, is to have their principles challenged. Here you have Captain America, a good person, a person who's trying to do the right thing, who has aligned himself with a political system, discovering that that political system is a lot more nuanced, let's say, than he had ever realized. And there's a lot more going on there that he doesn't really agree with. And then eventually he discovers, this whole thing was corrupt from the very beginning. And so when your entire ideology is based on your affiliation
with a framework, at least for that ideology, becomes tied
to a corrupt institution, what do you do as a person who's trying not to be corrupt? And I think that part of it is what makes it really, really emotionally engaging. On top of that, the performances are consistently fantastic. Chris Evans does such a good job as Cap.
I honestly can't tell you. Much like Superman, I just generally have always kind of disliked those characters. I kind of disliked Captain America in most comics. I really disliked Superman in most comics. And he's probably one of my favorite. By the end of Endgame, I was bawling, like, do you know what I mean, with what happened with him, because it was just, I think that Chris Evans and, you know, to the testament, like, the writers consistently in the Captain America films just really did it a service and really, like you said, allowed him to tackle that morality of his situation, which made him such a compelling character, like unbelievably so, and I really wasn't anticipating it. And I would go as far to say, in terms of standalone movies, Captain America, by far the most consistent.
Yeah.
Standalone movies. I wouldn't say there is one that I would say is a bad movie.
Yeah.
I think
we'll
they
see
are all
how the third
Spider-Man
shows up or turns out. Because that would be the only one that maybe if all three of them are better than the first Cap, then maybe.
Sure.
But
yeah. Sure.
I would agree.
But even then I would say, I mean, I am very hopeful for the next Spider-Man, just because it looks like a whole load of fan service and I'm fine with it, because I mean it's like this film was built for me. I've been such a Spider-Man nerd. I've watched all the Spider-Man films. I'm so ready to see like Andrew Garfield and everyone back in. Like, yeah. Andrew Garfield's gonna be in a good Spider-Man movie. Like, I'm, yes, yes!
He
like,
deserves I'm so, this.
He yeah. deserves this. He absolutely deserves this.
I would also be remiss if I didn't shout out Anthony Mackie. Does a fantastic yes. job as Falcon, also immediately likable. Scarlett Johansson does a really good job. I love the interplay between her and Cap. Yeah. They're just a really mm-hmm. fun duo to watch hang out. Robert Redford coming out of retirement. I like that they're drawing the connection also with like the 70s political thrillers by having one of the cast members from all the President's Men pop up as the antagonist of the movie. That's cool. Yeah. And in general, I mean, it's another Sam Jackson movie. Even the chase scene with Sam Jackson, where he pulls out the machine gun is like, that whole sequence is fantastic. Like, there's not a bad action scene in the thing. I would say there's not a weak scene in the movie. It's just a real strong movie all around.
When the Winter Soldier, when he catches the shield on the roof.
Exactly. Oh, I forgot about the Winter Soldier. Oh. The moral complication of that. Past coming back. And then the scene with Peggy, that's another scene that people forget about. But I just rewatched that scene recently. When she fully, like, when she has, it's revealed that she has dementia in the scene. Mm-hmm. And you see her, like, see Steve again for the first time from her perspective all over again. Like, that's a really sad scene. Yeah. It's just a good movie. It's just a real good movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. Okay, I will jump in. So this is the last of my kind of not so dead certs. This was a real, real toss up between a few other movies. But I basically knew that there had to be a Hugh Jackman representation on my list somewhere. Hugh Jackman had to be here. And so the Hugh Jackman film that made it onto my list is X-Men 2.
Yes!
I adore this film. Even if only for the opening sequence when Stryker's men are going through the school, it is just... I remember, even now as I describe it, I'm literally getting like chills. Like, it was just like... It rocked me, Jasper.
Not the real opening scene of the movie.
The real opening scene of the movie
is Nightcrawler in the White House.
Which is a top five
superhero action scene of all time to this
easily,
day, I would say.
Easily.
That
is
unreal.
It was always consistently in the comics. Nightcrawler was my favorite superhero. I remember coming into the movie, my mum took me, and my mum was like, I've never seen you so excited. And I looked at her dead in the eyes and was like, Kurt Wagner. I was like, because he'd said it in the trailers. Like, he said, like, my name is Kurt Wagner or something. And I remember being like, I don't know, like 16 or something at the time, or 15. I must have been younger. I don't know how old I was when this film came out. And I remember Oh God, I was very young then. I was like 11 or something. when I probably saw this. But yeah, I would just... It's such a mind-blowing film. Hugh Jackman goes full beast mode in this. Like, the whole backstory between him and Stryker is just like... incredibly complex and powerful, and that whole kind of like man versus machine, like, it really dips into like Frankensteinian kind of like concepts about like all the stuff with like Stryker's son, where he's trying to make like a version of Cerebro, and it's so good, so strong. Like, again, the action is just consistently great. Pyro is such an idiot in this movie, and I want to punch him so hard. Yep. Like, just constantly making dumb white guy decisions.
Stop
no
it,
offense.
Pyro.
Like, just calm down. I guess it's kind of your thing, but just calm down.
Such a hothead, Pyro.
But yeah, and so for many reasons, there was a few other Hugh Jackman close shaves, but that was the one that just pipped it for me, because I loved it. Yeah, I love X-Men 2.
And this is the one where they really, really bring the minority metaphor to the forefront. With that scene between Iceman and his mom, where she's like, well, have you tried not being a mutant? Like, they really start to lean into that aspect of the X-Men mythos.
Yeah, and all the is it Rogue?
Yeah.
Yes, right. It is Rogue. Yeah, like all of that. I remember even as a even being younger. I remember that, just finding that so heartbreaking that they just couldn't touch each other. It was just like, oh my god, like it was just so like. And he was just like, no, you won't hurt me. You won't hurt me.
She's like yeah, you'll be fine.
And it was. I remember just being like, oh my god.
I said what I said.
Makes it sound like she wants to do it.
No, she's like,
you kiss me, boy.
She's like, listen, I'll
drain your life force, motherfucker.
Show some restraint.
And what's interesting is like that scene is, I think, effective if you haven't seen the first one. But if you have seen the first one and you see the scene where I think it's like the opening scene of the movie where she's kissing her boyfriend and almost kills him. It becomes even more effective because then you're like, oh. You start to remember that guy.
She's dead.
Lady Deathstrike, dude.
Oh, that was cool.
So that is up on my list. I think we're getting into serious territory now. Yunati, give us another.
So for me, it's going to be my man Wesley Snipes and Blade.
Yes.
It's gonna be Blade. It's gonna be skating uphill, motherfucker.
It's just gonna be
Blade. I love this movie. I watch it at least once a quarter. The whole thing. I am a fan. Stephen Dorff is like, I think like that's one of his best roles actually, because he's not the greatest, but like he was incredible in that. I mean, like he's I think maybe he just had like a bit of a tumultuous career rather than him not being a good actor. I think he'd like early on, he, you know, the 90s, it was the time of like the tortured, alcohol ridden, drunk, drug taking, car crashing actors. So I think he kind of fell prey to that for a bit. But he was phenomenal in this. Hella cute. Again, another thirst trap. Wesley Snipes, another thirst trap. Great film. Great film. Solid storyline. Great action.
I mean, the nightclub scene.
I mean,
that scene is crazy. I gotta be honest. I watched this movie in preparation for this for the first time last night.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I've never seen it before.
Oh, tell us.
It's really good.
How did you find it? It's really great, right?
Yeah. Really, really, really good. It's very of its era, but honestly, it still works. Like, the action, another example, I think the action in that works better than the action in a lot of Marvel movies because it is, for the most part, it's not CG.
Yeah, it's all hands-on.
It
feels
real.
Okay, so stay very far away from Blade 3 because...
Yeah, please don't watch Blade 3, Jeremy, please.
The opening sequence, like, they don't even look human anymore. I'm like, what is that?
Jeremy, I think it's Ryan Reynolds back to his like Wolverine Origins days. Like it's that bad. I feel like that is like completes the trinity of bad Ryan Reynolds superhero movies where you've got like Green Lantern, you've got Wolverine Origins, and then you've got Blade 3 because
it's tragic, and I don't even know what they were trying to
Blade
go
Trinity,
for.
No less.
Yeah, Blade Trinity.
They call it
completes
Blade
the
Trinity.
Fun story about this one. I remember very much my mum went to see this at the cinema, and I was only 4, I think, when this movie came out. I remember my mum came home and went, one day I'm going to show you that movie and you're going to really like it. And I remember my mum very specifically being like, is he old enough yet? Okay, probably not. Like, like then, but like when I was like 12, she was like, maybe now? Nah, probably a bit too early. But I very much remember her like sticking me down when I was like, I think I was like 15 or something, and being like, we're watching Blade tonight. And it had been built up for me. Yeah. I was like 11 years later or something.
Yeah.
I was like,
I think,
Nunati, in terms of actual impact on the genre, you have named the single most important movie so far.
Yeah,
yes,
because
absolutely.
The 1-2 punch of Blade and X-Men was what paved the way for then the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man to come out.
Yeah.
And those three movies proved, after the debacle of the late period Batman movies, the late 90s Batman movies, that superheroes could work, and not just DC superheroes, but Marvel superheroes.
Yeah,
and
work.
What was clever about it was the fact that they lent into the vampires, because vampires were super popular at the time.
I
think that's how they kind of like got it in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like they didn't sort of. I think even if you watch the trailers now, it's billed more as like a vampire movie than like a superhero movie. Like I don't think I twigged for a long time that Blade is a part of like the MCU. Do you know what I mean? Like it was like. because I don't think they really pointed to it. So,
there was a slew of vampires were all the rage back then. Like so many films, so many bad films.
Does make you realize though, we still took us a long old time to get to Black Panther. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. We started with Blade.
Started with Blade, and then we got to
And it was
Hancock.
What I liked about Blade as well. What I liked about Blade as well was like there was like instances of strong female black leads as well. Like all of the casting was actually really quite interesting and a little bit brave. And to have that much, not necessarily like gore, but to have that much, I mean, the opening scene, there is a shower of blood,
it's
guys.
Very
I mean,
violent.
Yes, it's
there's
very
a shower
violent.
Of blood in the first. Mm. 4 minutes of the movie to get that approved. Like, I think they were really taking some risks. That was great. It was great.
Yeah.
And he had a really compelling story. He wasn't just like this vampire dude. There was a real compelling dark story and something that you could latch onto in terms of watching that character development as well. So it was loads of fun. I love that film.
It's the Daywalker. It was one of my favorite lines. I used to love it. I used to absolutely love it. I don't know if actually Jeremy, you could probably attest to this more, but I remember the way I recall it, very like Matrix-y in style.
Yes.
Movie is very of that kind of same era and
there is
you know,
a long
feel.
Leather
I'm trying
coat.
To see which one came out first.
A lot of long leather coats.
Blade came out before the Matrix, interestingly.
Yeah, yeah. Is it?
Yeah,
it wow, okay,
yeah.
there you go.
Before the Matrix,
okay.
yeah.
There we go. So
1 year before the Matrix.
Yeah. Black even that grading was like, I mean, like the grading is even the same. Like literally even the grade of the film was identical.
Yeah. yeah. I think, Matrix went a lot greener with it.
They did do the
like really leaned into
but
the
even the idea of doing a very like bold kind of graded style to the movie, like giving it like a bit
of
a coloration
and
a lot of leather and sunglasses for days. And even that sword was just so killer. Like it was
I love that sword and the fact that
like it was
you
like
can't
a short...
touch it, and if you touch it, it takes your hand off. I'm just like, yes!
Yeah, it's just, oh, man.
I love towards the end when the doctor character sprays some vampire in the mouth with like the garlic spray or whatever.
Yeah.
The vampire explodes.
Yeah, I love it.
It's not even like a... It's like a little stream.
Yeah.
Like a little like... And the person's like... And then it swoops up and pops.
Everywhere.
It's like evolution all over again with the head and shoulders.
The movie is so ridiculous. It's awesome. It's actually awesome.
It's great fun.
And I love that Blade is also just a complete jerk for most of them.
Yeah, he's
just
an unapologetic, absolute jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Just not a nice person.
He has
nothing
got
redeemable.
He's got no time
other
for
than
you.
The fact he saves the world.
Like, yeah.
Listen,
he's so unredeemable as a person.
He's got to take a serum. He hasn't got time for you and your problems, okay? Like, he's just got to solve things.
Yeah, that is absolutely it. That is absolutely it.
I'd say it's edgelordiness done right.
Yeah.
I would say. Also, interesting fact, I did a little research last night. Blade, when he first appeared, was not originally half vampire. He eventually became half vampire in the 90s when a Spider-Man villain, Morbius, bit him.
Is it?
Yeah.
I did wonder whether there was some link between the two. Because I've not really... Blade was probably a little too old for me comic book-wise when I was reading them. And so, I never really got into Morbius or Blade. Mm-hmm. So, interesting, though. Yeah, that's cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool that Morbius is there. And they're making a Morbius... Actually, that's true. They're making a Morbius film and a Blade film... Very close to together, I believe.
Oh, and I'm so happy, Mahershala
Ali.
Yes, he's gonna nail it.
Because he's our new Blade, and I'm so here for it.
He's gonna nail it. He's gonna nail it.
He looks a lot like Wesley Snipes.
Exactly.
Well.
Yeah, like he looks like him. I feel
he's gonna nail it. He's gonna nail it. The gravitas. Yeah.
The only difference is like no matter how much of an asshole Mahershala Ali is to me, I will never care, and I will accept him for who he is. Like, I don't care if he's horrible.
You better just pay
I'm
his
like,
taxes, though. That's all he needs to do.
Yeah.
Oh man.
My dude, Wesley, man.
Just,
but he's had a comeback. Did you guys see?
Yeah.
Did you guys see My Name Is or Dolomite Is My Name?
No, I have not.
I haven't actually. It's
he's
been on
really
my list.
Good.
It's been on my list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm really glad.
Checking out.
I'm really glad it's making because he deserves it, man. Damn it.
Oh, actually, and I did. I watched the first half of Coming to America Part 2 as well. And he's very, very funny.
Okay.
I haven't seen
very,
that
very,
yet.
Very, very funny.
Shout out to Dolomite Is My Name. It's basically like The Disaster Artist, except whereas the disaster artist kind of, one of the problems I had with that is Tommy Wiseau is like not a good person in that movie. Like, or at least if you read the book, like some of the stuff he does is kind of abusive and messed up, and the movie kind of glosses over it. In Dolomite Is My Name, they don't really gloss over anything, but the guy comes out a lot more likable than Tommy Wiseau does.
Yeah.
Because he's just honestly trying to do like, try to help people and make a movie. It's cool. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Nice. What's next? You're into your, are you now, Jeremy, into your serious top three nailed on ones? What do you have? What do you have? We haven't had a crossover yet as well. We haven't had one on someone else's list yet, I don't
think.
That's
true.
Which is interesting.
I think we're about to. Okay. By the way, I think we're, Sam Jackson count is at three right now, right? Incredible. Oh no, is it four?
Four. I think four. Yeah, yes. With Winter Soldier, I think.
Yeah, Winter,
four,
Winter Soldier, Incredibles, Infinity War,
and Unbreakable.
So we're at four. Yeah. Okay.
Four. Sam Jackson count.
It is not about to increase, but we are about to have, I think, our first multi-list movie with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yo,
This was actually top on my list. Not that we were doing tops, but this was top. You go for it, Jeremy.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
It is an absolutely fantastic movie on every level. It's basically an adaptation for those of you who are not familiar. Back in the like turn of the millennium, Marvel launched a whole new comics line called Ultimate Comics, where it's like, hey, we're going to take all the characters, update them for the new cool hip age, and throw out most of the backstory so people can just start reading now. And so Peter Parker's 15 and in high school again. And then about 10 years later, they were like, okay, you know what? We've had enough of 15-year-old Peter Parker. We're going to kill Peter Parker and introduce another guy entirely. And inspired by the push to have Donald Glover cast as the new Spider-Man after Tobey Maguire left the project, they decided to make the new Spider-Man. I believe he was 13 years old, a 13-year-old half-black, half, I think, Puerto Rican
Latino.
Named Miles Morales. He is, this is an adaptation, a loose adaptation of the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man comics line. But it's not just him. It also throws back to the Peter Parker of the original Sam Raimi movies. It throws back to Peter Parker of the comics and also alternate versions of Spider-Man, Spider-Man Noir, which I've read Spider-Man Noir. You got Peter Parker, the Amazing Spider-Ham. I haven't seen Penny Parker before. She was one that I hadn't seen.
And then obviously Gwen as
Spider
well.
Gwen. Spider-Gwen, very popular. And it's an animated movie. It's similar in the same vein of The Incredibles in that it's like everything just works.
It just really
every
works,
single
man.
Piece of the movie lands.
It's
the
so
soundtrack,
good.
The voice performances, the casting, the writing, the animation, all of it is about everything. As good the as it could have gotten.
Yeah, so for me, the reason it was like basically top of my list, because I was like, pound for pound, I think this is the best superhero. I do think this, in terms of like, if you tick through the list of how to make an incredible movie, like, it has everything. Mm. Like, there is like some of the most powerful and potent imagery, some incredible social commentary, like just like in terms of like the fact that his dad is a black man who's a policeman and what that represents in America right now, and like there's so much of that in the movie as well, like it goes even beyond it just being this kind of excellent movie. And then like even just like the finer details, like when Miles is learning his like powers, they animate him at an ever so slightly slower frame rate than the rest of the movie, so that he looks slightly like juttery and like jarring with the world, whereas Peter Parker, who's like teaching him how to be Spider-Man, is like swinging like in like full like 30 frames, I think it was, and like kind of looks really graceful and kind of glides, and he's sort of stuttery and jarry, but you kind of, you don't really notice it, but it's like it's there, and just the level of detail,
that's really good work,
it like is just unbelievable. And again, some of the action sequences are just like
stunning. That final battle, I'm sorry, I was like literally couldn't breathe.
Yeah. The colors, like the way that they tied all of that in, and then the moment for me where when What's Up Danger starts, he like backflips off the building, and then we see him the right way up, but the whole like New York is like upside down, and he's falling with the like black Spidey suit on. Oh my god!
That's
like,
that's one of the best scenes in any superhero movie.
Yeah, it was. It was really just good, and like format wise, it was what I thought was so clever is like it really wasn't groundbreaking in terms of like, you know, new Spidey gets his powers, has had, you know, kind of uncovers a bit like some tragedy involving an uncle, and you know, ends up saving the day. Like, it was very kind of, we've seen that before. Mm. Yet I was just in, like, I was just, well,
it's like Casablanca, like it's one of those things where it's everything just works about as well as it possibly could have.
Yeah
Like, I don't even 100%. Know if the people going in knew that it was going to be as good as it was, because I know that didn't happen with Casablanca. They finished the movie and were like, wow, with this one, it's kind of, it feels like a similar scenario where it's like they may not have gone into this thinking, let's make arguably one of the best superhero movies ever. But then they finish, and it's like, yeah, okay, well, I guess we did that.
Well, I think that when you listen to like the directors, and I think it was like Phil Lord produced it, who did a lot of it. He's done like some of the Lego movies, and then it was directed by I'm trying to think.
Directed by Bob Parrishetti, Peter Ramsey, and Rodney Rothman.
Yes, who they'd done a lot of stuff with, like with Phil Lord as well before, and he did like Rise of the Guardians, which is actually a really solid movie. Mm. But I think they went into it with so much like care and joy for what they were doing, like just down to like the tiniest details. They nailed it.
Yeah,
and they absolutely just got it perfect. Really, you know,
I think that one word just underlined bagel.
Yes,
for the people who see the movie. That one word, I think, just exemplifies just how much attention to detail went into that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Just absolutely amazing. Amazing. And it's top of my list, and for a good reason. So nice. I will then go on to I'll stick with a similar vein before I reveal the last one on my list, and I will go with Black Panther. We all knew this was going to be on the list. Yeah. It has to be on the list. And again, kind of, it's also to do with the stuff like around the movie as well. Mm. But I just think that once again, a superhero film lives and dies by its villains. And I think that Michael B. Jordan brings the sauce to this movie. Every single second he was on screen, I was like, I was in love. I just like this guy. Yeah. Is fucking cool. Like, I wanna be him. I wanna like.
So when are we
terrifying.
Rioting? Because I just want to be on his team. I'm like, let's go to those museums and crack all those glass cases, please and thank you.
Like,
they basically made a Black Magneto. Which is, in a way, I think they made Black Magneto more sympathetic than they'd managed to make original Jewish Magneto up to that point in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's the idea of a person who, from a certain point of view, to quote Ben Kenobi, you could say has some strong points.
He's got a point or two.
He's got some strong points. Really good. Completely agree.
So a fantastic villain. Oh, sorry, Yonata, you go back to jump in.
I think my sort of favorite bit of the movie, it'll always be my favorite bit of the movie, hands down, is just sitting there and watching John Carney and then, like, listening to Tossa on a screen, like, internationally that big. I mean, I've watched loads of, like, Southern African films before, obviously, in my native tongues. But that was just, like, yes. And then also listening to some of the actors bastardizing into Tossa, that was adorable. Like, you know, like, I was like, wow. But it was like, you know what? I forgive you. It's okay. It's okay. It's fine. Thank you, Black Panther. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And watching that in Peckinplex in a cinema full of black people, all dressed in all of their African garb and just, you know, throwing shade at the screen and that poor white family at the front who looked very intimidated.
Just like, what is going on? I thought this was a Marvel movie.
Oh, it was a fantastic
You're all American as well.
Yeah, I don't know why I did that. I apologize.
An American white family? Complex.
Hey, look, it was an important movie. You had to go see it when they just happened to be on holiday at the time. You know,
most British people I know don't know what Peckinplex is. I had to talk to so many people from my school to go to Peckinplex.
Like, it was like this whole like, it was this actors group that had organized the entire thing and filled out the whole cinema, and there were just 5 seats, and it was just this poor family who'd booked tickets on the wrong night.
That's
like
so
everyone
funny.
With theater trained voices just going, yes, colonize.
I think that was absolutely it for me as well. Like, going to see this movie, theater just filled with black people who just the joy in that cinema, like the music, the traditional rhythm,
the, like, guys. People,
oh my God, Angela Bassett exuding fucking.
But then even the fans, did you not see people's Instagrams when the thing was coming? People were like, "I'm arriving in my full impact," or, you know, "I'm gonna wear my dashiki." Yeah, yeah. Like, people were showing up full squad goals. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
People had rehearsed dances to practice inside the cinema as they rolled up and did videos. Guys, it was real.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the cast is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
The incredible Chadwick Boseman and I just
the costume design.
And I think what was so good for me was a moment where I think a lot of people realized that even though this is a hugely commercial, hugely, for profit kind of thing, it could still be so important and so impactful and so prevalent. Do you know what I mean? To like, just society as a whole. And I think that what it did, like, I just remember there being such an explosion of like black joy around this release of this film and people going to like
Wakanda was everywhere.
Like you said, like going to Wakanda was everywhere. And I think that it just that it kind of transcended a lot of what superhero films had been up until that point.
Yeah,
which I think the reason why. It has to be on the list, even if you don't think pound for pound it's like the best, you know, with like action and all that kind of stuff.
The CG's rough.
Really rough. Like,
it's like
Black Panther is arguably Black Panther is better in Civil War than he is in Black Panther in terms of just like him as a fighter and what he does and how cool he looks and whatever. He's better in Civil War than he is in Black Panther, but like, yeah, just again, just what this film does. What this film does
I would say everything up until the initial Killmonger versus Black Panther fight is pretty much unimpeachable.
Yeah.
Like, that whole first half of the movie is like incredible. Yeah. And then after that, I think the movie does lose a little bit of steam. And then, of course, the bad CGI creeps in. But as a whole, still a very, very good
movie. And then the final bit of taking him to see the sunset
that
over
was a
Wakanda.
Great scene. Fantastic.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And like Michael B. Jordan's face, just his acting in that moment just rocked me. Yeah. Like, it was just, wow. Yeah. So absolutely Black Panther.
And also just a lot of strong black women, you know? Just a lot of straw.
The Jabari? Is it Jabari? Is that the I think that's what they're called? Is it Jabari? Hold on.
I have to look
I'm going
to
remember this. No, the Jabari, that's who Mbaku.
Yeah, yeah, it's the Dai something.
Oh, they're in...
It's based on a real group troop of women, I think, in North Kenya? Not Kenya, no. It's based on a real group of women who fought back, warriors who fought back against the colonizers, and I cannot remember.
Oh, wait, are they the same?
Dora Milaje. Yeah. That's it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They just kick ass. I mean, just, like...
Yes.
Still, Mbaku really is a cool. Bafo, yeah. Oh, Bafo. Like, that still gets me hyped. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, dog. Like, I know. And this is the crazy thing as well. After all of that, I still know I'm going straight up to the mountains where the gorilla people be at. Like, that's my people up there. I'm like, you kick ass. Let's go. Like, yeah, what a film. Great what a film. Film. Beautiful, Yanati.
My last one, my top one on the list, my inner goth is showing, The Crow.
Mm. The Crow. Okay.
Another one. Okay. I think there are two movies on your list that I haven't seen in their entirety. The first one was The Phantom. I've seen part of The Phantom.
Yeah.
But I have not seen The Crow. I know a little bit of the backstory, but I've not seen The Crow.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen either, but it's been, it's one of those things where, like, I've seen a lot of, like, those YouTube deep dives into, like, movies, and The Crow always pops up as being one that, like, loads of movies have referenced it and, like, made little homages to it in the way they film and stuff.
Yeah, it's become a major sort of cult classic. Like, the film itself, I mean, shot when? 1994 now. I haven't watched...
Year I Was Born, represent!
Ooh, I'm an old...
What? Sorry, that was like triggered me. Yeah, we'll cut that out just in case you happen to listen to this again.
No, it's okay.
Just for
you. Cut it out. It's okay. 30s are the best.
Add it to the opening credits.
30s, your 30s are the best times.
Just that noise, that like, oh, God.
The thing is that it's not even that bad. Like, the difference isn't even that bad. I'm 1987, you know what I mean? But it's still just like.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure earlier you mentioned being like 9 or something when I was like 4. So it's just like not that
it's really not that bad, but it just freaks me out every now and then. I don't like hearing it, okay?
Fine, understood.
But yeah, essentially it's your sort of classic revenge sort of action superhero film in which the lead character, Eric Draven, played by our boy Brandon Lee, who sadly died while this film was being made, on the set of this film. Which
really? Wow.
Yeah, he got shot up.
That's the main reason that I've heard. Yeah, Bruce Lee's son died.
Yeah,
That was Bruce Lee's son.
I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was because the gun marshal had forgotten that there were actual live rounds in one of the. Essentially, if you watch the film, he gets shot a lot, like a lot. Like, his costume is Swiss cheese by the end of it. Literally Swiss cheese. That's one of the things about The Crow, is that he's dead. He was murdered by a bunch of thugs who then murdered his wife, and then they bury him, all that stuff, and he comes back from the dead, vengeful, kills them. You know, classic plot line, works. Supernatural Avenger. But there were just so many guns flying around and so many bullets flying around that somehow...
It was a defective blank.
Yeah.
It was a defective blank that accidentally shot a piece of the blank out and hit him in the abdomen.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Well, I need to watch this film as an homage to Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
Now, so.
I mean, it's currently it's dated. It is what it is, made in 1994, but it works. It's one of my favorite films, one of the best soundtracks. I mean, I was a goth, so one of the best metal and like Nine Inch Nails, the industrial goth soundtracks I've ever heard in my life. I still listen to it.
It's got
Ernie
Hudson in it. I did not know Ernie Hudson was in this.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
And it's just a really, really beautiful story, and he's glorious in it. And yeah, I still have my snake bite and all the other metal in my body, so goth till I die, and I love The Crow.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Great, great shout. Jeremy, do you have two left?
Yeah.
You didn't put Black Panther on the list?
Man, it's that
shame
CGI.
Shame on you,
it's
sir.
It's that end fight.
Shame on
it's
you,
end
sir.
Fight. If you were going to ask me a list of greatest superhero movie villains, Killmonger would have been a shoo-in. But
sure. Sure, sure,
as
sure,
a
sure,
whole,
sure.
I think the movie really does suffer after the first fight. It's still a good movie, but I think it goes from being one of the best superhero movies ever to being, okay, it's a good movie.
Okay. Like I said, I completely agree with you. It was just...
It is a landmark.
The surrounding,
I would say it's the other most important superhero movie that has been mentioned so far.
Yes.
I'm about to mention the third most important superhero movie that's been mentioned so far.
Let's go.
With the original, You Will Believe a Man Can Fly, 1978 Richard Donner Superman.
Wow.
Christopher Reeve, one of the best superhero performances in any movie, as far as I'm concerned.
That was a really good Superman, to be fair. My grand's favorite as well. Sorry.
Yeah, it's one of the best, if we're talking scores, possibly the most iconic score on the list so far, which is saying a lot, because there have been some really good scores.
Really,
When you go in against... mid to late 70s into early 80s John Williams, you will almost always lose. And this is one of John Williams.
That is a matchup you do not want.
It's just, you don't want to go in against John Williams. Especially around, this is within a year of Star Wars, guys. He was on a roll.
Yeah.
He'd done Jaws 3 years before.
He was feeling good.
He's going to do E.T. in 5 years.
The keys were on fire, you know?
He was about to do Raiders of the Lost Ark, guys.
Yeah. What a soundtrack. Like,
there's
nothing
you can do. Soundtrack, but just the way that it translates.
I'm just getting like flashes now of John Williams doing like the rock, like it doesn't matter, like just fully going into people's studios and just being, it doesn't matter, I'm winning the Oscar.
Look, that is like, that's like the period that took him from being like a talented dude to most people's top three-ish, if not top one, film composer of all time.
Absolutely.
It was a heck of a run. But even aside from the soundtrack, does it a fantastic job of paying homage to the mythos and the reason that anyone really cares about this character by looking at it. Starts with the black and white. You get the comic footage. It's a really sweet, lovable, fun superhero movie, and it highlights the fun, positive aspects, I think, of the Superman character. It is not a serious film. It gets very emotional at times, but it is not a serious movie. With Christopher Reeve's performance, I think it kind of underlines why, to some degree, a Superman Clark Kent disguise probably could work in real life. Maybe not now, but definitely like in the 70s could potentially have worked, because
Social media or stuff
without
like
people
you could
constantly being
it.
Able to film you. You could have pulled it off, because look, even if you saw a dude who looks like Superman, the performance of Clark Kent is so drastically different from Superman that you immediately see like, oh yeah, well that's just a guy who kind of looks like Superman. That can't be Superman. And I love,
plus also he is like a classic looking dude.
I mean, come on,
there's a lot of dudes who have that face.
It's
that
also
just looks like Todd.
I don't know, man. Todd, I don't know what Todd's been eating, but if Todd looks like that.
Have you seen Todd from Accounting?
He's really good.
I don't know what firm you're working at.
He's been crunching some numbers. You know what I mean? Like,
he's crunching a lot more than numbers. Todd's about to.
Todd from Accounting is now, like, we've got a Todd from Accounting as an episode
Todd
title.
Todd can balance my checkbook anytime. Even the scene where he switches between the two of them and you see him change character without actually having changed any of his costume, absolutely fantastic piece of acting that he brought to that. I think Gene Hackman does a strong job as Lex Luthor. I think the movie as a whole is, I think the idea of emphasizing, because what's interesting about it is that it leans into the fact that Superman is strong and awesome and cool and like the dude who can save everybody. That's what the movie emphasizes. In contrast to, I think, most Superman movies which have come since then, it emphasizes this is a benevolent, safe force. And I love the interplay between Superman and Lois Lane. Margot Kidder does a fantastic job as Lois Lane. The initial initial
good old late Marlon Brando.
He does a great job,
as Jor-El,
though.
Yeah, he does a really good job. Like, it's better than Apocalypse Now.
I wouldn't even say that. I think Apocalypse Now is fantastic. I think in both cases, Fat Brando at his best.
Fat Brando
1978
at his
was a good year for Fat Brando, man. I think that was Apocalypse Now as well. But I also love just the way the scene when he, it's like it follows that theme of Superman being like saving people and that being his mission to such an extent that when he fails to save Lois, first of all, I really do like Christopher Reeve's acting in that moment. It's big, but I mean, it would be. This is his major connection in life. The dude is completely falling apart and he decides to just break reality. He literally is like, no, and goes back and refuses to let a person die on his watch. Is it the best?
I will say this is a shining endorsement of the movie that you have just said, Jeremy. I have a long sort of stated history of watching like older movies. Like, for instance, I watched the original Star Wars trilogy when I was like in my teens and was like, these are rubbish films, just because I was like, the CGI was bad and I was like this uneducated little
I agree, the CGI was bad.
Like, you know, it was like, this looks terrible. But I very distinctly remember watching that movie when I was at a similar age and thought it was dope.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Which was a rare thing for me to do, to watch an old film at that age and think it was good, because I was, you know.
Is it?
My tastes were at 300, you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of film that I thought I enjoyed. Ooh. Now I'm like, ha ha, hey, oh my god.
I will conclude by saying this. Is it the greatest superhero movie ever made? No. It's probably the best live-action Superman movie that's been made,
For sure.
For my money. But I think that in terms of doing a really, in terms of, first of all, kicking off the genre, and in terms of making a movie, which frankly, most superhero movies still don't follow this formula, about a good guy who does good things because he thinks it's the right thing to do. I think you can't get too much better than the original 1978 Superman.
Very good.
Very, very nice. Very
I'm
going to complete my list.
Sorry.
What was
I just
that?
Thought about Billy Zane and I was like, whoa.
Billy Zane in the remake of 1978 Superman. We'll put him in the Superman costume. See what
put him in the Superman costume. Yeah.
Okay,
Yanofi is fanning herself right now. Okay, so to complete my list, had to be on there. It's The Dark Knight.
Of course.
Yeah.
We all knew this was coming.
Absolutely. I would go as far to say a seminal movie moment for me. One of the moments where I think I was like, yep, cool. Like, I will do anything to be involved in movies in some way. Like, it transported me to a place and I don't think I've been as engrossed by a movie up until that point than I was in that one. Heath Ledger is arguably one of the best villains, and like I remember at least now, like, you could look back as well and see the amount of heat that they got for that casting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like the amount of people that were like, the guy from Brokeback Mountain's gonna play the Joker, like,
tale.
What the yeah Knight's Tale, he's gonna play
you.
The
great,
yeah, it was like,
I
it was, I think
him.
It was a bit like the, it was a bit like the McConaughey casting in True Detective. It was like the rom-com dude is gonna be in this gritty crime thing, do you know what I mean? And it was just like, and I mean, he just brought it. I mean, and I would honestly say it's such a performance that I think it makes that film so much better than it is. I genuinely think it is a good film and he makes it an excellent one. Like I remember nearly having palpitations when he was on screen because I was genuinely terrified. Like, it was so scary. That scene where he has the camera in the abattoir with the policeman.
That's
my word. Yeah. Like, he just, I'm going to make this pencil disappear.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and like, just the way he, I think that it's no coincidence that he's still probably one of the most like referred to villains.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think if you you go to any Comic-Con, you go to any kind of like event, you talk to anyone about a villain and he is on everyone's list somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, Thanos might not make it to a couple lists.
He's the one who turned the Joker into movie Hamlet. where every young to like 30s to 40s actor now has to try their hand at playing the Joker.
Yeah. It was just an unbelievable movie. I thought he was the most compelling character. I'm so heartbroken that he didn't get to reappear for the third movie, because I think that was always the plan, that he was going to be a part of that third movie and tied up with, I think there was actually someone, I saw somewhere that like there was a, Nolan basically said that like the whole Ra's al Ghul's daughter, like a sort of plot was brought in to replace what Joker was going to be, because Joker was going to be the kind of person behind the whole Bane thing. And anyway, a truly, truly, truly unbelievable performance. I think Christian Bale as Batman is unbelievable. I actually rewatched Batman Begins the other day, and whilst it is a lot hammier than I remember, like some of the lines are very like on the nose.
He's
and I
driving
remember
a tank.
Yeah. Fully like, you know, what are you, scared of bats? And then it's like, no, that's his thing. Like, what?
Swear
like,
to me.
Yeah. Her fall from this height wouldn't kill me. I was counting on it. It's like, it just, it's you know, great. Like there's some real moments where you're like, oh, geez, wow. Okay, this is, but I'd still say
it's awesome,
for
though.
Me, yeah. The Dark Knight, I feel like The Dark Knight is one of those, kind of fits into the character, maybe not as much as the previous ones we've mentioned, but fits into a category of very, very important superhero movies. I think without that movie and the success of that movie, we don't have what we have today. And unfortunately, it did start DC down on a very dark path, which I really wish it hadn't gone down because it could have been so good.
Well, like Black Panther probably wouldn't have gotten an Oscar nomination. They literally changed the Oscar rules because of the Dark Knight not getting nominated.
Yeah.
Which is wild because it was what a film. What a film.
Side point. I just wanted to ask, what do we think about the politics of the end of that movie? Because I have long felt that the tacit support for the Patriot Act level surveillance was always a little bit like, ooh, where it's like Batman basically hacks everyone's cell phones to spy on the entire city, basically trying to combat terrorism by using like basically a large scale invasion of everyone's privacy in order to basically to spy on everyone to locate the threat. It's a Brit who wrote it is the thing. So I guess
my immediate reaction is like, I'm like, it was, I guess it was a very sticky one because it was like, it was used one time for like a thing and then it was destroyed afterwards and it was only Morgan Freeman who had the keys and we could trust Morgan Freeman, right?
That's, like he's not gonna, like, as long as we can give the authority to someone we can trust.
Yes, that was, you know,
okay
that, so that's where I feel like, yeah, that's where I feel like it does get a bit icky for me. I'm like, no, like, there's a part of me that's like, did he definitely destroy it? Like, I just want to make sure that he definitely, like, he doesn't have that in his back pocket somewhere to spy on his ex.
Morgan Freeman is the villain of Batman 4. Yeah. Lucius Fox, just destroy everything.
Oh, man.
That would be, yeah. It's a really good movie. I wish that they had figured out how to make the Batman suit look good in motion, because he still looks geriatric.
He's super rigid.
Very, very rigid. Fights.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's still a great movie, but despite any nitpicks or flaws you could point out, still works.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Absolutely.
Heath Ledger
Jeremy,
puts the
round
whole
off.
Franchise on his back.
Yeah. Just fully heaves it up a hill. And also I want to shout out Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow.
I love Cillian
Murphy as an actor, and he brought it in every, I think he's in all three of those movies, actually.
I think
he's in all three of those movies. A very small cameo, I think, in The Dark Knight, and then much more in it in one and three.
Yeah.
But a fantastic actor and everything he does. So yeah. Shout out to Cillian Murphy. Finally,
continuing our trend, which is a trend that I think I've certainly noticed before, and I think a lot of people have noted, that in comic book movies, the second movie is usually the best one in the franchise. We've already had Winter Soldier. We've had X-Men 2. I can't remember what else, but we're about to hit. We just had The Dark Knight. Hit you with the second really good two that came out. Third, technically, is Blade 2 came out. But in my opinion, the best of the original really good twos prior to The Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2. My favorite superhero movie of all time. Great. I would also say, I think as far as I'm concerned, that train sequence, still my single favorite fight from any superhero movie. I don't think it's been surpassed in terms of the drama of the emotions of it. In the spectacle, especially for the time. But look,
and the amount of places that have tried to copy that almost like pound for pound that sequence is like it's wild how many have tried to do it almost exactly the same thing. Yeah.
Yes, I think after the failure of Spider-Man 3, a lot of people look back at the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies as being some kind of ridiculous cheese fest that's just not really worth paying attention to. No. Those, if you go back and watch those movies, are they cheesy? Yes, but it's an intentional cheese. They are deliberately
Sam Raimi.
It's he's deliberately. I mean, this is the dude who made Evil Dead.
I mean, Sam Raimi. What are you expecting? It's supposed to be cheese. Man. Like,
it's harkening back to 1960s era Spidey, and especially like mid to late 60s, taking a classic, I believe, 60s storyline in which Peter Parker loses his confidence and thereby loses his powers. And really, the classic Spider-Man setup through most of Spider-Man's career, which is that Spider-Man ruins his life. And makes him a complete failure to everyone around him. His grades are bad. He can't maintain positive relationships with anyone around him. He can't make any money. Like, everything about his life is sad, but he keeps being Spider-Man because he has this sense of duty that he has to keep doing it. And I think it does an excellent job of establishing that. Alfred Molina is an exceptionally charismatic Dr. Octopus. Also, those arms, the effects on those arms, especially for the time.
Really good.
Like, I would say they still hold up. I mean, again, it's mostly puppetry, so, you know,
absolutely. But I would like to say about this, because it very nearly made my list for a very specific reason, which is it's one of the first superhero movies, and probably one of the last for a while, that doesn't suffer from what I call third act syndrome. Oh. A lot of superhero movies really suffer from third act syndrome. And it's just kind of where, like, you get to the end of the movie where suddenly, because you're trying to tie everything up so kind of, you kind of have to tie everything up so quickly, you end up like really dehumanizing the villain, because they just kind of, they end up like, you foil their first plan, so they like level up and turn into some sort of monster version of themselves. It just kind of becomes like a bit of a punch fest.
It's like one of the reasons why, like,
And it's like one of the reasons why, like, for instance, like Wonder Woman, I think, is two thirds of a fantastic movie and one third a really bad one, because the third act is just like bonkers. Like, it's dope. It just doesn't follow a logic. And it just kind of, and like, and I will never forgive them for the decision to CGI the mustache underneath the God of War's armor. It was just so fucking weird. But you know, but Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, the third act is the best act. It is just the culmination is so good, and the end.
Oh man, oh,
the end is like. It's in the mirror.
That Harry and Norman Osborn scene is the end credit scene before end credit scenes. That's what it essentially was. That was end credit scene before they started doing those.
And it was
also just the drama, the emotions of it. Every single relationship gets so much development. It's Peter and his aunt have the huge relate, like, to the point where it's like implied that she may even know that he's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He admits that he was involved with Uncle Ben's death in some way responsible. Like, that's a huge moment. Peter and MJ, she finds out he's Spider-Man, completely understands where he's coming from. He now has
the Spider-Man kiss.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has to.
Iconic.
He has to accept that he now has to, like, he accepts that, okay, well, you know what, maybe I can let someone into my life. But it also ends on that kind of like graduate melancholy note where she's like looking at him going off, and there's a moment of her like being like, oh wow, that's really, she's realizing like, this is really dangerous what's happening. I'm actually not sure if this is going to work. There's like a question mark. Peter's relationship with Harry is under all this tension because of Harry blaming Peter for taking pictures of Spider-Man and blaming Spider-Man for his dad's death. And then he unmasks him, which is like, I remember at the time, it was just like, whoa. And really, how often does that happen? I mean, maybe it happens in a lot of superhero movies, but I don't know, man. Batman's never been captured and unmasked in any of his movies. I don't think it's really happened very often.
The only other time I can think of is the last Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ending of Homecoming.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it Homecoming?
It's the end of Far From Home.
Far From Home.
Yeah, it's that twist. Like, and that whole scene.
Yeah.
And like, of course, Peter getting a second father figure in, I guess the first two movies are him getting new surrogate father figures. First in Norman Osborn, now in Dr. Octavius. And of course, seeing how that goes wrong. There's just so much to love. And then again, though I think really, yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying, Jasper, in that the third act, the movie builds to the third act. I think it's just a really well structured movie. I don't know why more movies don't do that.
It services the third act and not kind of gets
We don't have to just have
caught
one.
Up in the third
act. It doesn't
kind of like. I always feel like it kind of it's like a train that gets like some bumpy tracks. It kind of just gets a bit like, yeah, I've got to keep going. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, just change track, man. It's fine. It's fine. We'll forgive you. It's just this is clunky as hell.
And train sequence. I mean, even the first fight's great, but that train sequence. I remember at the time, this movie came out in 2004. I was a 12-year-old boy when I saw this movie. That scene was like the entirety of what I'd ever wanted from a Spider-Man fight scene. Spider-Man's my favorite superhero. It's also that it's a long fight, but it never gets boring because they just keep mixing. It start on the clock tower, then we're on the train, then we're on the side of the train, then he's getting dragged behind the train, and this man will not stop. It's like to the point where when he pops up for like the eighth time, swinging by Dr. Octopus, he's like, "Oh my god,
just stop!"
He will not stop, and it's like he tries to throw him through a walkway. He just spins through it. It's insane. Yeah. This fight.
It is.
And then of course the climactic train stop still holds up to me. Yeah. Oh, such a great scene.
Such a good moment.
All round, really, really good movie. I think it's a solid pick. If you don't want to put it as a number one superhero movie of all time, I think your list would be harmed by not having it in the
somewhere.
Mix.
In the mix,
if you haven't seen it, guys, go check it out. It's really good.
It's worth it.
Third Act Syndrome was one of the reasons I didn't have Iron Man, because that deserves a mention. But Third Act Syndrome was the reason that, because again, two fucking great heart, like two great thirds, and then what? Wow. Well, what a collection of movies. If you haven't seen any of these, go watch them.
Not very many MCU movies, actually, comparatively.
Yeah. I only had two on my list.
I think I only had one. I only had one MCU movie.
One.
Yeah.
Nice spread, folks. So, not very many DC movies, sadly.
The Snyder Cut was not bottom of the list.
Yeah, but I will say shout out. I think if we were probably of an earlier generation, the first Tim Burton Batman might have made.
It was kind of on my list, but it got bumped. It was kind of on my list, but it did get.
Was
bumped.
It Billy Zane? Was it Billy
Zane? It was Billy Zane. I'm sorry, purple's my favorite color, and he's just so cute.
Buttocks.
Yes, by his purple,
by his purple buttocks.
Oh my god.
It's a purple butt.
Purple
muddle. We've already been talking for a while on this.
The 50th episode of the show.
We had to do something. Yeah.
There's so many honorable mentions that we should include on Twitter.
So many honorable mentions.
I have a whole list.
But yes, we could put them on the Discord or something. Maybe that'd be quite fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, let us know what if you feel like we've missed any, if you feel like there's any that were particularly good that we missed off. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
I do have to say this. I feel the need to say this because I feel like the soundtrack for the Sam Raimi movies gets slept on. I know his name is from Oingo Boingo, Danny Elfman. The Danny Elfman soundtrack for those movies.
Danny Elfman.
Fantastic. Absolutely evocative of not only like the spirit of like superheroism, but also you can hear the spiders crawling like with the little the strings. And then like you can hear the web swinging in the theme. You don't get that in superhero themes anymore. That's one aspect of soundtracks that you miss.
Massive shout out to the Spider-Man games. Actually, just because they do an incredible thing where they have dynamic music in the game.
Yeah.
So it swells like as you start swinging, and it is honestly mind-blowing. You really... I can't tell you how much I'm looking for like Spider-Man.
Right?
The most recent, like Marvel, the Marvel Spider-Man, I think it's called, and then Marvel Miles Morales.
Yeah.
They're unbelievable games. And on that note, thank you very, very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Let us know what top fives you want us to do next and what we missed off. Yes, if you like this and you want more of our stuff, don't forget you can find us at TB Halflings on all social medias, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagrams. And you can also find us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings. Thank you very much for listening. So long, Shire Folk!
So long, Shire Folk!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.